Great. Thanks so much, Maria. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Spotlight on Women's Health Cyber Seminar Series. I'm Dr. Jessica Friedman. I'm an epidemiologist and a co-investigator with the Women's Health Research Network Consortium. I'm thrilled to introduce our speakers today, who will present their research on bystander intervention to address harassment in healthcare settings, the state of the evidence, and research at the VA. This is the second in our two-part series on harassment. Today's cyber seminar will be presented by Dr. Mark Relier and Dr. Amy Drapolsky. Dr. Relier is a community psychologist and statistician at the VA Connecticut Healthcare System. He's also an associate research scientist at the Yale School of Medicine. His focus is on understanding how to prevent sexual assault and harassment and improve outcomes for survivors. Dr. Relier's current research seeks to understand the frequency, consequences, and predictors of patients' harassment towards staff and other patients within healthcare systems and the utility of bystander intervention training to address patient harassment. Dr. Drapolsky is a clinical research psychologist and associate director of the clinical core at the VISN 5 Mental Illness Research Education and Clinical Center. She's also an adjunct associate professor at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Her work focuses on developing and testing person-centered tools and interventions for veterans with mental illness and understanding and addressing barriers to care. Most recently, that's included the focus on addressing the needs of women veterans. So with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Relier.
Thank you for all coming today. So I'm gonna be talking about kind of the state of the evidence for bystander intervention at VA and then the literature in general. So I'm first going to provide a quick overview of harassment at VA. So some of this will repeat some of the information you may have heard in part one, just to give an overview for people who weren't able to attend last week. I'm also going to be talking about the state of the evidence more broadly in the literature for bystander intervention, and then what we still need to know. So the main things we know about harassment at PHA, we know harassment is fairly common. So for those of you who were here last week, you'll see that about 13% of women veterans reported harassment in 2022. We also know that, thankfully, harassment has decreased. So this is down from about 1 in 4 women veterans in 2017. And these decreases have been fairly steady, which is a great sign. However, it's still fairly common. When we talk about harassment, we're going to be talking about really two forms of harassment. For the most part, gender harassment and unwanted sexual attention. So when we talk about harassment, a lot of people automatically think of that unwanted sexual attention. But for women veterans, a lot of women veterans experience different forms of gender harassment, such as sexist comments, being told to smile, or a lot of comments about questioning whether they belong at VA or women belong in the military, et cetera. And you'll also see from the example here, sometimes for unwanted sexual attention, even when it is unwanted sexual attention, a lot of times it might be a little bit of both. I also want to note that even though we're talking about gender harassment and unwanted sexual attention, that people are intersectional, have a lot of different identities, and because of that, harassment is intersectional. So when people are facing harassment, even though we're going to be talking about those forms of harassment, a lot of times people experience more than one aspect of their identity that they're being targeted for. Harassment occurs often in a lot of public areas, both within view and out of view of other people. The impact of harassment, we know, in general causes anxiety, avoidance of public spaces, lower feelings of safety. Specific to women veterans, importantly, women veterans report delaying or missing care to avoid being harassed and feeling less welcome at VA. And although we're going to be talking about really harassment among women veterans, it's really important to note that staff also experience a lot of harassment and that the impacts on staff includes burnout, errors, lower productivity, intentions to leave. And it's important to note that all of these things that are here also impact witnesses. So even if someone is not the target of harassment, when they see harassment and that kind of hostile environment around harassment, they also experience many of these same things. So at VA, we've also determined that there are kind of three groups of veterans who have been identified as likely to commit harassment. And it's important to focus on these because each group might require a little bit of a different intervention as we talk about bystander intervention. So one of these is individuals with cognitive or mental health challenges. So for a long time, people have talked about kind of inappropriate sexual behavior among people with different cognitive or mental health challenges. Then there's people who we found are not really necessarily aware that what they're doing is harassment, either due to generational, or cultural, or normative factors. So this group is not necessarily intending to be demeaning. And a promising thing about that is that means educational interventions can be really effective because they want to change behavior if they find that it's problematic in some way. And the third group is people who are aware that what they're doing might be unwanted or harassment and continue to do it anyway. And this group might be more likely to test boundaries or push envelopes or more likely to target people. Over the past 6 or 7 years, VA has been doing a lot to address harassment. So different cultural change initiatives and poster campaigns, the White Ribbon campaign, messaging from leadership, improved reporting. And we're going to be talking today is bystander training. Bystander training is being done right now for both for staff and veterans are also able to engage in bystander training as well. It's become one of the large pieces of the overall VA efforts. So what is bystander intervention training? So bystander approach involves viewing everyone as potential helpers. Usually these trainings are about 1 to 2 session trainings to try and educate people on what the problematic behavior it is, try and encourage people to intervene and teach them strategies and allow them some opportunity to practice. When I say intervene, it's important to note that people can intervene before, during, or after. So beforehand to try and change social norms and to try and teach what is appropriate behavior and create expectations for what behavior is appropriate, what behavior is not appropriate, to intervene in the moment of harassment, and also afterwards to support those who experienced harassment or to educate those who are engaging in harassment. So in theory, how do these programs work? So a lot of people focus these days on kind of what the first block here shows, that perhaps these programs work because we get people to intervene and then they intervene to address harassment, and that's why we reduce harassment. And that is a possibility for how these programs are working. However, we know that it's also possible, the literature that said that these programs, when and if they do work, might be working through changing social norms. So it may not actually be the intervening in the actual instances, which is decreasing harassment. It might be really the larger changes to those expectations about what behaviors are appropriate. The third way that they may work is really preventing harassment among those who went through a training. And this is a different way than we normally think about bystander intervention. But to give you a quick background, bystander intervention grew to popularity originally kind of in the sexual assault field. So sexual assault programs for about 10 to 20 years were finding a lot of reactants when they had and a lot of backlash when they were doing programming. They knew the content was important, but a lot of people, particularly men, were feeling they were being targeted as being potential perpetrators. A lot of women felt that they were being blamed or they were being treated as victims. And so the programs were repackaged into trying to provide a lot of the same information, but through approaching everybody as potential allies or helpers. And the goal of that was that then you could give information on what behaviors are appropriate and inappropriate, but through treating people as potential allies, and you could give people education on how to respond if they're experiencing some inappropriate behavior and kind of what warning signs to look for without feeling that they're being blamed in some way. And this kind of grew through a lot of the interpersonal violence field. Nowadays, we talk a lot about people intervening themselves, but currently most of the literature is we'll kind of look at who has studied impacts, study the impacts on the people who went through the training. So it's possible that training people really works on the people who go through the training. I mean, it could be one or all three of these things. There you go. So the big question, does it work? So these programs are very popular, especially in schools, in the military, on the VA, but what's the evidence for them so far? So most of the evidence comes from high school and college studies and bystander programs. There have been a lot of different meta-analyses and reviews that looked at these studies. The studies pretty reliably show that bystander intervention programs are able to reduce harmful attitudes towards gender or violence. They're able to increase awareness and knowledge and motivation, intentions, and confidence to intervene. And they're able to improve self-reported bystander behaviors. So people report intervening more often after going through these programs. Fewer of those studies have tested the impact on interpersonal violence at all. And out of those, even fewer have studied harassment as a particular outcome. So there is a randomized controlled trial and some quasi-experimental designs that have shown reduced harassment. And the reduced harassment randomized controlled trial was in high school specifically. So currently that's where the behavioral evidence comes from, through a direct reduction in harassment. So what's the evidence in healthcare settings? So in healthcare settings, out of the studies that are out there, most of them are similar in length and content to school programs. So usually 1 to 2 sessions, covers a lot of the same intervention strategies and content. However, it's a little bit more broad than just focusing on harassment. Many in the healthcare settings more broadly focus on discrimination, bias, microaggressions, in addition to harassment. They're usually using convenience samples. And a lot of these programs are focused equally or mostly on the harassment that staff themselves experience, in addition to or instead of what they witness. And they also tend to focus on problematic attitudes, seldom focus on problematic attitudes. So they're not usually measuring whether it's changing problematic attitudes of the people who went through the programs. And they're usually evaluated with a single arm pre to post test. So there really aren't a lot of randomized controlled trials in this area. From pre to post test, however, we do see a lot of the same impacts that we see in college programs. So we see increased knowledge and awareness, self-efficacy, and intentions to intervene. So what about behavior change? So there aren't many studies that have actually looked at long-term behavior change. Right now, the evidence is a little bit mixed. So one study, it was a bystander program, bias and microaggressions, found no behavioral changes. One study looked at kind of 9 to 18 month follow-up, found that only 18% of people at follow-up said that they had any opportunity to respond, of which 85% intervened. And an interesting thing about this number is for people who were able to attend last week, women veterans reported that staff or somebody else saw the harassment in only about 20 to 40% of cases. So they reported a lot of harassment when no one was around to see it. And here, and this is coming from medical staff here, also reporting around similar percentage, so they didn't have an opportunity to respond. However, promisingly, at least in this study, they did find 85% of people reported that they intervened. However, you'll note that the number of people is very low. This is a very small N study, and this was not a randomized controlled trial. So it's hard to know if this is directly the impact of the program. And then Hock et al. In 2020 found in a 3-week period, 65% reported experiencing or observing harassment, and about 2/3 addressed it. And that's very promising. However, again, this is a very small N study. And when people did report addressing harassment, most often they were talking about harassment that they themselves experienced and responded to, not harassment that they intervened in on behalf of others. So some of this is somewhat promising, but we don't necessarily have the randomized controlled trial to see whether these behaviors increased. So what work has been done at VA? So at VA, we, in Women's Health Issues a few years back, published an article looking at evaluating some of the earlier bystander intervention programs at VHA. And these were also, again, a pre-post design. We were doing this at originally just Connecticut, and then also a site in Chicago. Some of the major findings of this is that found about 2/3 of people of staff reported witnessing harassment of women veterans in the past year. And although it's upsetting that so many people witnessed harassment, it's also promising that that means that we have a lot of opportunity for staff to intervene. However, only about 1/3 reported that they ever intervened to stop patient harassment. Promisingly, from pre to post, we see, again, those same increases in awareness, self-efficacy, and intention to intervene, and decreased barriers to intervening. So we see a lot of those attitudinal variables change, which is promising. Again, we didn't have long-term behavioral impact of the program, so we're not able to determine whether increased behaviors. In terms of the staff perceptions of the training, we also found that staff find bystander intervention training acceptable and appropriate in length. They find the most useful parts of training here are learning to intervene and having some type of group discussion and effective facilitation and getting that information on harassment. We also at the time asked for suggestions for improvement. This is from 27 to 2018 to keep in mind. And we find that they were saying more training for supervisors, staff, and veterans are important, more role playing, more leadership support, and ways to report anonymously. For those who saw the talk last week, VA has been working on all of these areas over the past 5 years. So that's great that a lot of these suggestions for improvement, we have seen a lot of improvement at VA in all of these areas over the years. And for those who weren't able to attend last week, the Women Veteran PFAP Project, when they looked at women veterans reported when they experienced harassment, they reported that about, again, 74%, the majority of harassment, 74% of gender harassment, 74% of sexual harassment and 63% of gender harassment weren't seen by staff. And they did say when staff did see, staff unfortunately often didn't help. So out of the situations when women veterans experienced harassment, they reported that staff only both saw harassment and tried to help in about 6% of sexual harassment, 12% of gender harassment. So that leads us to a question of why aren't staff intervening? And can we get them to intervene more often? Original qualitative research at VA in 2016 found that staff kind of reported patient factors and individual factors and organizational reasons that they may not intervene. So they were worried impacting patient dynamics or rapport. They were worried about that certain patient characteristics, such as those cognitive issues, might mean that patients weren't intentionally doing this, so they felt uncomfortable intervening. The individual level, they weren't quite sure how to define harassment or when it was appropriate to intervene, worried about conflict. And then at the organizational level, they were worried, they just didn't understand whether there was organizational tolerance for harassment, whether this was kind of allowed, they didn't know known policies, thought there was insufficient leadership support, and this would and they thought there were a lot of competing priorities. And again, this is in 2016, and there have been a lot of changes at VA and efforts to address many of these issues over the years. And then quantitatively, we also looked in that evaluation study we did with 271 staff in a couple locations. We tried to look at factors that were associated with whether people said that they noticed harassment and factors with whether people reported intervening. And we see that people reported that being too busy to notice harassment, others appearing unconcerned, not having skills to intervene, and being unsure of VA policies were all barriers to noticing harassment, and being too busy to notice and having fear of being reported to the patient advocate served as barriers to intervening. In that program, we also looked at whether those barriers could be affected by the training. So promisingly, we did find we reduced barriers overall. However, in highlighting here, it shows what barriers kind of at the individual item level were reduced. And we see that so there were many promising barriers that were reduced. So skills deficits dropped, they felt like they could intervene. They reduced the barriers of being worried about intervening with older veterans. They were reported reduced barriers of apprehension of reporting. You see that reduced the barrier of being unsure of VA policies. So that most of the barriers to actually noticing harassment or barriers to intervening were not impacted by this. So kind of summary of the evidence. So programs, we seem to be able to increase awareness of harassment and change attitudes towards intervening. And we see some evidence that programs might be able to get staff to intervene on their own behalf. However, some challenges is that a lot of harassment towards patients goes unseen and that organizational barriers may not, perhaps unsurprisingly, be impacted by an individual level training. So it may take a lot more efforts, which are being done at VA, but it may require a lot more than training in order to affect some of those organizational barriers. It's also unclear if programs can or do increase intervening. And lastly, unclear if intervening is necessary for programs to decrease harassment. So as I said earlier, it's possible if it works at the individual level. It's not clear how these programs are necessarily working. So if intervening is the important thing, or social norms or other things are the important thing to focus on. So kind of next steps in what we need to do. So for basic research, we need to identify what factors are being associated with committing harassment, so we know what the targets for intervention should be. We need to know now that a lot of veterans are electing to do a bystander intervention training. So about 10,000 veterans have reported doing bystander training at VA Connecticut, which is, I'm not VA Connecticut, for VA wide, and that's great. But we want to know whether veterans are willing to intervene with other veterans, whether intervening impacts the rates of harassment at facilities. We want to know where intervening has had negative impacts. So intervening, there's a variety of ways people intervene. So we want to know, is it always positive, or if it is negative, are there any forms that might be harmful? What forms of interventions are seen by patients as helpful and which could be inadequate as harmful? We also need to know more about when patients disclose harassment to providers, how those providers are responding. And we need to know the impact the provider reactions and reporting systems have on veterans. And then at the programmatic level for interventions, we need to know whether these programs are impacting behaviors themselves, reducing harmful behaviors and attitudes, or increasing helping behaviors, or impacting social norms. We need to know whether these programs do decrease rates of harassment at facilities and how long these programs, these effects last, and any moderators that might affect the efficacy of programs. We also need a lot of research on implementation research to figure out how best to improve the adoption of trainings and the adoption of whether people are actually intervening, and the sustainability of how long these effects last and how to sustain trainings among staff and at facilities. And the evaluation of acceptability and outcome of training veterans, now that we're training veterans, and identifying novel ways to educate staff and veterans. And with that, I'm gonna turn over to Amy Drapowski, who's gonna get into one of the potentially novel way to educate staff and veterans. Thank you all. Amy, turn the mic over to you.
Yep, I'm just having an issue with turning the slides. Let's see, moving the slides.
Click into the slide.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. There we go. I think it's working. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, thank you. So today I'm going to talk about a recently completed HSR-funded project designed to develop and pilot test a veteran-informed bystander activation intervention to address gender-based harassment at VA. So what I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about and describe our process of developing the intervention, including specific materials for the intervention, and then once developed, its pilot testing and what we found. So here is just sort of an overview of what was our initial kind of development framework. So we developed the intervention via an iterative process, combining social, ecological, bystander principles and prior research on harassment, much of which Mark sort of just presented, as well as knowledge gained and materials developed via photo voice and focus groups, and then consultation and feedback from members of our research team, which included veterans, as well as a stakeholder group. And I'll talk a little bit more now about sort of what that involved. Okay. All right. So as was described earlier, bystander education, has been shown that it may be effective in increasing awareness about harassment, knowledge about how to intervene, and intent to intervene. So not surprisingly, we plan to include bystander education as part of our intervention. However, research has shown that in order for it to be really maximally effective, the education, it's important for it to be tailored to a particular setting or a population that one's trying to reach. So one of the first things that we did was produce several prototypes illustrating different ways that people could intervene. And then we conducted focus groups and or interviews with women veterans, men veterans, and VA staff to obtain some feedback on those materials. And so what is here is sort of the end product based on some feedback that from those focus groups and interviews that was included in the intervention. And I'll talk a little bit about that later on as well in the presentation. The next thing that we did is we basically worked with women veterans who had experienced harassment previously to develop photo narratives And for those who aren't familiar with photo narratives or photo voice or photo elicitation methods, typically what this involves is individuals taking photographs to document how they experience a particular issue. And then they work to develop personal kind of narratives or kind of captions that accompany the photo that describes and contextualizes each photo's meaning around that issue. Photo voice has been used extensively with a wide range of topics, including sexual violence, and with veterans and in VA settings. And they can be particularly useful with more complicated, sensitive topics that might be challenging to express via traditional means like interviews or verbally, and can be a really powerful messaging tool to kind of raise awareness around issues, provide concrete evidence of concerns, and potentially increase empathy by eliciting strong, memorable emotional reactions. And so that was part of the reason why we chose to develop photo narratives and potentially include them in the intervention. So for our study, what that involved, the slide here sort of describes the process of that. So it involved two individual sessions where participants were provided with information regarding how to take photographs, discussed a little bit about what types of things they might want to include or topics they might want to cover. And then they went out and took photos and then came back and worked with a research staff member to pick three photographs that best reflected their experiences and then develop some accompanying kind of captions that help describe sort of the meaning behind those. So what we also did is then once people created their individual photo narratives, we also invited everyone back to participate in one of two optional group meetings with other participants as well as research staff, where we had them view the photo narratives, discuss them, and then provide feedback on which ones most clearly illustrated key concepts for them and potentially should be considered for including in the intervention. Okay, so I just want to also, again, it can be a little abstract, so provide a few examples of what the photo narratives look like that were developed and included as part of the intervention. And here's one. Across the 12 women who participated, a total of 34 photo narratives were created. And some of the common themes across them included things like the emotional impact of harassment, its impact on service use, specific examples or incidents, perceptions regarding lack of support or accountability. And also, while certainly there was a number that focused on maybe negative aspects of experiencing harassment, we did have people that also produced photo narratives that focused on strength and empowerment and sort of the ability to overcome. And so this photo narrative here is sort of an example of one person's sort of describing the need for all women to feel safe, comfortable, and respected when they're receiving VA care. And this next example, I think it's one of the ones that really focused on this idea of empowerment and strength and that there are people to help and that not to let a bad experience sort of stop your growth. Oops. So once those materials were developed, we worked on sort of developing the larger intervention itself. And so first what we did was identify key content and information and draft an outline for what the intervention would look like. We then established smaller work groups to help collect and develop materials, as well as sort of considering options for how to display some of the materials that I discussed earlier that were developed for the intervention. Then a draft version of the intervention was developed, sort of the visual aspect of it, as well as the narration that would go along with it and was edited sort of via an iterative process. And then once that was finalized, the initial version was shown to a stakeholder group of women veterans, men veterans, and VA staff. And then we used that additional feedback to make further improvements prior to the pilot testing. Okay, so what did it actually look like? So our initial pilot version of the intervention ended up being a 30-minute video, which included sort of visually slides, as well as kind of voiceover and narration throughout.
It included educational information on gender-based harassment, what it is, its prevalence, its impacts, and effects. It also included education on bystander intervention, so what it means, our roles and responsibilities as members of the VA community, and particularly in particular strategies. Specifically, we use the four Ds for this. Oftentimes there's the five Ds. I think people have used variations of this, but based on sort of feedback from some of our earlier work with the participants, we use these four. So direct, distract, delay, and delegate. Okay. And also just to, want to provide a few examples of what some of that information and education looked like within the context of the intervention. This is an example of some of that educational information that was provided. So here we provided information on different types of harassment, behaviors, and language, and provided some specific examples, many of which were actually provided from participants in the earlier portion of our studies that reflected harassing language and statements that they had heard. And when this was presented, there was sort of narration describing both the range and the types of harassment outlined here, as well as the fact that these interactions occurred in a variety of spaces, including common areas, waiting rooms, hallways, and clinical settings and encounters, and that many women veterans report experiencing multiple types of harassment. Okay, so and then in addition to giving educational information about different ways that people potentially could intervene, we also provided people with scenarios that demonstrated how each of the four Ds could be used. So this is an example of what we used for direct, which is when you respond directly to the harasser and sort of call out their behavior in an assertive but calm way. So what would typically happen is this would be shown, they would sort of visually see what was said in this scenario and how the person intervened. And we also had voiceover of this happening sort of in real time. And then after that, this included some narration, some additional kind of context for what was going on and potentially what the person was thinking and why they decided to intervene. So we talked about the fact that, the person had heard inappropriate comments and saw that the woman looked annoyed. He, felt comfortable stepping in and thought a direct approach would be best, and made clear that the comments were unacceptable, but did it in sort of an assertive and firm way, remaining calm and civil throughout. Okay, we also wanted to make sure to provide people with opportunities to practice. So we then presented participants with two different scenarios and asked them to describe what they would do and say to intervene using the four Ds. So here is an example of one of those scenarios, which again was pulled directly from sort of earlier participants, one of their examples. So we presented these and then had them go through and actually give examples of what they would say and what they would do. Okay. So where were the photo narratives in this? So basically what we did with the photo narratives is throughout sort of this information that was presented and this practice that we had people do, we sort of interspersed the photo narratives to remind viewers of women veterans' real life experiences with harassment and its impacts. So for example, when we focused on different topics like the impacts of harassment, or we were focusing on describing the importance of intervening, we then might show 2 to 3 photo narratives that included accompanying audio of a woman reading the caption to highlight and reinforce the key points that we were trying to make during that particular segment. So for example, the example of the photo narrative that I showed earlier, this first one, that highlighted the point about women deserving to feel comfortable, safe, and respected when receiving services is shown at the beginning of the intervention to highlight the importance of the topic and the need to address it. And then the second one was shown at the end of the intervention to really sort of highlight this idea of there is assistance, there are people that could help, and that there is not to let the one experience sort of stop your growth moving forward. Okay. So lastly, what we then included was information on reporting, who and how to report harassment to, additional resources to learn more about and potentially practice how to intervene, as well as current VA initiatives that are aimed at addressing harassment. Okay. So that's sort of a little bit of an overview of what the intervention looked like. Once this initial version was developed, we then conducted a pilot study, really to assess its feasibility and acceptability, but also to look at some preliminary outcomes in terms of, you know, how and whether it might be helpful. So for this, we recruited 35 veterans and one VA staff member. We planned on involving more staff, but had some difficulty with recruitment and due to some time constraints and given that veterans were sort of our main target audience, we focused on that. Okay. So what we found, in terms of acceptability, many participants noted positive impacts of the intervention, and that included things like it being informative and educational, that it brought awareness to the problem and simplified the message regarding intervening. Specifically, people talked about it being helpful in teaching them different options for intervening. Some mentioned that it made them more aware of harassment at VA, how often it was occurring, and what it can look like. So some people talked about the fact that it was, you know, clearly they were aware of more sexual harassment, but the sexist harassment wasn't something that they thought about as much or maybe noticed as much. But there were suggestions that were made to enhance and kind of improve the intervention, and that included several production aspects. I will say we originally, this project was conducted during, well, it was done during the pandemic, and we had originally proposed it to be more of an in-person intervention, and then had to switch to make it more, to make it remote and more portable. Because of the limitations in terms of doing things in person. And so certainly there was some things that you know, I think we have an initial version, but there's some things that we could do to make the production value even better. The second thing is that there was some additions. People talked about tweaking some aspects of the scenarios, some of the language, some of what was in there, as well as adding video testimonials. And so there was a few people that suggested that including something like having a video of a woman veteran discussing harassment and its impacts, or a woman veteran discussing what it was like to have someone intervene, or even a bystander describing what it was like to actually intervene. They felt like including something like that could be helpful, again, in just sort of pointing out the importance of it and how beneficial it would be. And then lastly, we had some people mention things, something in terms of maybe having different versions of the intervention. So originally we were sort of viewing this as something for the VA community as a whole. So that could include veterans, staff, other members of the VA community. But several people noted that it could be helpful to have different versions because then you could focus on maybe different aspects of harassment. And intervening and potentially reporting that could be useful. Okay. Although many participants noted a preference for using a direct approach when responding to harassment, several said that the intervention either taught them or reminded them of alternative approaches, or that providing different options for intervening could be helpful for people who don't feel as comfortable being direct, or in situations where direct might not be the best approach. So a number of people talked about situations where there might be a safety concern. And so it helped them to think about, you know, other strategies that they might be able to use in those types of situations. Others reported feeling less comfortable intervening directly, but said that they could see themselves using other less direct strategies to intervene. So while the preliminary sort of focus was on feasibility and acceptability. We did look at some preliminary sort of outcomes as well. And we did find a small but significant increase in awareness of harassment, knowledge regarding how to intervene, and intent to intervene. So, you know, we found these results to be promising, but do acknowledge that, you know, this is a pilot study with a small N. We don't have a comparison condition, and we also weren't able to look at actual intervening sort of in the future, since it was such a shorter pilot study. So, but again, I think some of these, you know, again, are promising in terms of some potential impacts of an educational intervention. So, interestingly, while our qualitative interviews were really designed to focus mostly on feedback specific to the intervention, many participants provided sort of thoughts and suggestions for addressing gender-based harassment more broadly. One of those that was commonly noted was the need to have clear messaging regarding the fact that it was unacceptable. Also, many stressed the importance of seeing employees, leadership, others stepping in to address harassment in real time. Many people noted that they, which I know was discussed earlier, that they sort of felt like the staff should be the first people to step in, and that there was, you know, they had experienced times where they had seen harassment happening and hadn't seen step in. And so there was real, you know, sort of a need expressed, you know, in terms of seeing that, so that again, the veterans would sort of feel like they should also step in that instance. And then others indicated the need to make the consequences of engaging in harassing behavior clear. Still others noted the need for information about who to contact to report and how to get support, as well as the potential benefit of broad messaging that uses a variety of methods for increasing awareness. And a number of kind of their suggestions are outlined here. Okay, so I just want to say of note is that this study was conducted around the same time that the Deborah Sampson Act was signed and began to be implemented. So, you know, it's and within that includes a number of efforts that have the potential to maybe address some of these needs and concerns that were described, including things like providing information on harassment policies being sent to all veterans, a designated point of contact for reporting, and also a hotline number for individuals to call to report if they're not at the VA. So it's possible that people might express less of a need right now, currently now, or in the near future, as many of those things get put into place. Okay, so in conclusion, we found that generally the intervention was acceptable to participants. However, they did mention several suggestions for improving and enhancing it. The initial results suggested that the intervention could be helpful, potentially in increasing awareness of harassment, knowledge regarding options for responding, and people's intent to intervene. But certainly, as I mentioned earlier, it was a small pilot study, and there are a number of limitations, so certainly further evaluation of it is needed. Okay, so our next steps is that we're going to work on continuing to revise the intervention based on feedback from the pilot study. We're also working to share the results and discuss it with relevant people and programs to help inform additional revisions to the intervention, as well as sort of just generally next steps. And then the other thing that we've been talking about is sort of thinking about and exploring ways to better understand and potentially improve this perception of the culture of VA, the culture of VA facilities. So one of the things, as I mentioned, that was noted is that participants talked about the fact of wanting staff to step in, and that they had experiences where they had observed harassment and hadn't seen staff step in to do something, and that they really felt like it would be helpful to have staff modeling that as well. So I think better understanding what that is and how to potentially think about it, because again, it could be that staff are stepping in at different points, but better understanding sort of where this perception comes from and how potentially to address it moving forward. And then lastly, as I mentioned, further evaluation of the intervention via a larger trial, as well as considerations regarding how to implement something like that, since it is mainly designed for veterans, is needed. Okay. So lastly, I just want to end with a few things, because often when we talk about harassment, it can prompt people to kind of consider what maybe start thinking about or consider what they can do as an individual or as a system or program to address these issues. So just want to leave with a couple thoughts related to that. So one of the things is, if unsure of what to do or just wanting additional information, is to seek out additional training and consultation. There's a number of trainings and educational materials that are available on the Office of Women's Health SharePoint, as well as through the VA Assault and Prevention Office. Certainly too, you can discuss things as they come up with your supervisor or colleagues to sort of think about what could be done in a situation. I think, in addition, stepping up and stepping in when you hear or observe harassment, as mentioned, a number of participants noted that they would like staff to be the first to step in and stress the importance of seeing that modeled in terms of setting a tone. So knowing who and how to report at your facility and what resources are available to support someone who may have been harassed. And then lastly, there are a number of materials, as we've discussed, that have been developed by the Office of Women's Health and the VA Assault and Prevention Office. And so while they are up in the facility in different places already, you may want to consider whether you would want to display some of those or have those materials available, in your work area or program. Okay, and then lastly, what can programs or systems do? So certainly, engaging colleagues and or veterans in discussions about harassment and brainstorming ways to address it can be useful. Considering if procedures in the environment could be modified to reduce or address any harassment concerns. And then connecting with others in your facility to promote awareness about gender-based harassment and policies for addressing it. Certainly, as I mentioned, there's a number of materials that have been developed and a number of programs that have been put out through VA, but certainly there's those that are available that can also think creatively about other ways that you might want to do that at your facility. Okay. And so I just want to end with, again, just a big thank you to our funders and our study team for this project, others who have provided assistance, and a special thank you to the veterans and staff who contributed to the development of the intervention.
Great. Thank you both for a really interesting and engaging talk. As a reminder, please do put your questions into the Q&A, but I do have a couple to start us off. This first question is for Dr. Relier. It seems the evidence for bystander intervention is mostly in schools that we don't have that much data in healthcare settings. Given that, do you think that VA's focus on bystander intervention makes sense, or should we wait for more evidence?
Yeah, I think right now, bystander intervention in schools and other settings is pretty strong for a lot of those attitudinal variables and for increasing people to intervene. And I think currently it's kind of the best state of the literature that we have, so it makes sense to move forward with it now. That said, I think we definitely need to kind of continue moving forward to it with an eye that it should be evaluated robustly within VA to try and figure out how to, not only whether it's working, but really how to improve the impact of it and how to improve the implementation of it.
Right. Thank you. This next one is for Dr. Dapolsky. This question concerns the Photo Voice project. During the processing of the images captured by your study participants, were there themes or images that generated strong reactions from your participants?
I think you mean in terms of maybe in terms of the developing. So, I mean, certainly, well, I can speak to the development part of it. You know, it's interesting because I think with things like Photo Voice, we often that is has been used as more of an intervention itself sometimes, and looked at in that way, and less that it's been used, the materials being used for some other type of intervention. And I think, you know, there were some individuals, which again, it was you know, it did bring up some sort of feelings in terms of developing, you know, taking the pictures and sort of thinking about it. But many of the participants talked about it as being a positive experience for them. And then seeing some benefits of just developing the photo narratives.
Great, thank you. This next one is also for you, Dr. Topolsky. When discussing the acceptability, you discussed including testimonials from veteran women on the experience of harassment or bystanders on intervening. I'm curious if you've considered including testimonials from men veterans on the experience of learning about the effect of harassment on women veterans.
You know, that wasn't something that came up, but I think that's a great idea. That's another one that definitely we should consider.
Great, thanks. And then this last one is for you, Dr. Rillier. You said a lot of different research questions that we still need to answer for bystander intervention. Which of these do you consider as the most critical or in need of attention right now?
Yeah, I think, I guess more than one of them, but I think right now, since we've started to train veterans on intervention, this is novel in a lot of ways. I'm not aware of any other healthcare systems training patients to potentially intervene with other patients. And we just don't know what that looks like or what the impact is. So I think that is probably one of the biggest areas to really kind of learn more about. And learn, I think, second to that also, to learn about the impact when people are reporting harassment, kind of how that process is going in order to see what kind of reactions that they're getting from staff, I think is another key one that we need to focus on.
Thanks. We have a few more that are coming in. The VA went on bystander intervention / green dot training during the pandemic and held numerous trainings. Is there any attempt to use any of these outcomes from these trainings to inform the utility of this programming in the VA? This is directed to whoever prefers to answer first.
Sure. I think it might. I know for the green dot trainings, they did some evaluation afterwards to try and figure out what's going on. I haven't seen any results so far at that evaluation. I'm not sure if the program office has results of that, but I know that that they were looking at kind of the evaluation of that with a guideline to improve. If you go to TMS and type in bystander trainings, you'll see there's actually a lot of different bystander trainings at this point that is possible to do. There's training specific to supervisors. There's trainings to something called the ERASE program that involves both harassment and kind of and also how to respond to harassment yourself experiencing. There's a lot of different programs going on. So I think the feedback gets put both into the same program and then into other programs.
Thank you. We have another question. Have you looked into the potential impact of additional systemic factors such as staffing? If staff are all too busy to notice or intervene, as you noted, might it be possible that staff could intervene more if they had a workload that allowed them to be more responsive or more staff to help with intervening? Are there other literature or about systemic factors related to staff intervention, such as burnout or moral injury for healthcare workers? Sort of a two-part question.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not aware of any research that looks at whether particular staffing patterns increase the likelihood of intervening. That is a really great question, I think, for future research. Makes me wonder how we would go about evaluating that in our own work. And then the second part of that question, can you reread the second part of the question? Just to make sure.
Yeah, absolutely. This is more about resources. So is there other literature about systemic factors related to staff intervention, such as burnout or moral injury for healthcare workers?
Yeah, there is some literature on kind of how to support, not looking at harassment, but there's some literature out there on how to support other workers to reduce burnout, how to reduce different things to create basically a better working climate among healthcare workers. But I'm not aware of any literature that looks at intervening in terms of harassment, discrimination, that directly related to that also looks at that currently. So I'm sure that bridge has been made in any of the literature that I've seen.
Great. Thank you so much. It looks like we don't have any additional questions in the Q&A. So with that, I would like to thank you both very, very much for this wonderful talk on bystander intervention to address harassment. This topic is really essential and timely and important. So thank you so much for your work in this area. For those of you on the call, if you're interested more in learning about the Women's Health Research Network, please sign up to get our emails or contact our Deputy Director Adriana Rodriguez or me, Jessica Friedman, with ideas for future cyber seminars focused on women's health. And with that, I wish you all a good rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to prepare and present for today. And for everyone else that's joining us, when I close the meeting, you'll be prompted with the survey form. Please take a few moments to fill that out. We really do count and appreciate your feedback. Have a great day, everybody.